Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to talk football with the Professor John Clayton, as we do every day at this time with Wyman and Bob. If you guys have questions for John, you can text those in right now to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We'll try to get to some of your questions before we let him go for the day. Hello, John.
Hello. Somehow, some way, I'm able to talk to you today. It's been brutal.
It's the miracle of technology. These cell phones are a wonder, aren't they?
No, but the problem is when you have the power off in this area, where in fact, you know what a nice place I live in, Barbie Mill, and we've got 1,451 homes from the top of the hill all the way past Barbie Mill that has no power, and we may have no power for a couple of days. And so, honestly, I live in one of the great places in this area, and I feel like I'm on Gilligan's Island because I have no. I mean, basically, I can't get a cell. I can't send a text. It doesn't. We haven't done not enough power in the text. I don't have internet. I can't get emails. I can't do any of the normal stuff I do. I can't go on my database. And so it's like I basically just, you know, sit around, no TV, no power, nothing. And it could be like that for a couple of days.
Which character would you be if you were on Gilligan's Island? I'll ask you the same, Bob. I would like to think of myself as the professor.
I would hope I'd be my nickname.
You're the professor.
Yeah. Why can't I be that?
Yeah. You can invent things, but just not a boat to get off the island for some reason.
That's right. Yeah. I'd be Ginger.
Yeah.
You would?
Oh, man. Oh, boy.
Didn't we just lose Ginger in the last week?
No, Marianne.
No, it was Marianne.
Oh, that was Marianne. Okay, Marianne.
Yeah, you know, she was Miss Nevada.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's.
I don't know if you guys know this. I'm from Reno, Nevada, where we were state champions.
That's what I've heard. I've heard rumor of that.
That's right.
Yeah.
But wasn't Ginger from Washington, the state of Washington? Am I wrong on that?
Tina Louise?
I'm not sure about that.
I don't know where she was from.
Well, we hope you get off Gilligan's Island very soon, John.
Well, at least you're on island with Scott Service. You can go hang out at his house if you want.
Well, no, he's got the same problem. He has no power.
Yeah, but you could keep each other company.
That's true. In fact, I've got to get word to him. It's like, if you're listening, turn on the fireplace right now, because if you don't, it's going to be too cold tonight when the sun goes down. I mean, we went from 72 to 68 degrees, and once the sun goes down, if you don't have the fireplace on, it really is going to leave you cold.
Yeah. Well, hopefully things will get rectified there soon, John. It's a lot of people going through the same thing, a lot of people losing their power. So hopefully that all gets turned around. Let's talk some football. And I know this broke when we were talking to you yesterday, that the Seahawks parted ways with Brian Schottenheimer. Now that you've had a night to sort of digest it, talk about it, think about it, what do you think of the move, A? And B, do you have some names in mind that are realistic? I think everybody's got kind of a wish list, and I don't know how many are realistic, but just in your mind, a couple of candidates that you think are realistic possibilities.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of get the feeling, and this surprises me, because particularly, you know, the Sonny Marty Schottenheimer, if he's really wanting to pass the ball that much more than run the ball, and I know he's doing it in a way to satisfy Russell Wilson, but it sounds like there's a little bit of a philosophical difference. Decided to move on after 3 years, and I thought it was three good years, because I think you can see in Brian's play calling, he grew each year. At the beginning of the year, I mean, he certainly was able to get a good mix in with the pass and the run early in the first three quarters, and so I thought that seemed to work out. But then also, when you look back, so much of that was against bad defenses. And so once the good defenses came in, he didn't make the adjustments. And I think Pete brought that out, and it tipped off, and I'm sure Dave Wyman has seen it more than I have, is that once teams started to go to two deep zone, having five guys underneath for coverage, fewer guys were open. And so because of that, there was more coverage sacks. There was more Russell Wilson runs that were, you know, supposed to be passes, because, you know, he'd either run. And so, you know, we got 47 sacks, three a game, roughly. And then, of course, you know, the intent of trying to run the ball on passing situations mean that literally, they probably were a 35-65 run to pass ratio because of all the runs that Russell Wilson made. Now that maybe I'm a little bit over on a number, but you can see there's differences as far as replacements. I think Pep Hamilton could be a good one. You know, the Los Angeles Chargers offensive coordinator would be a good one. I don't know much about Tony Elliott, but of course at Clemson, but he coached some guy named Trevor Lawrence and did a pretty good job there. I still will get people angry by mentioning the name Daryl Bevel, but I'll mention the name Daryl Bevel. And then who knows who else could creep in, you know, because everybody was probably thinking Doug Peterson, but I can't imagine Doug, even though he's from Ferndale, even though he probably can get a head coaching job, would come and take an assistant job when he's still going to get paid $5 million a year to do nothing, if that's going to be the case and you take a year off.
John, from what you've, you know, covering this team for as long as you have, what do you think that there's any kind of fracture between Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson as far as, you know, their relationship and how that went, and how much do you think that Russ is going to be a part of this selection process?
I don't know if he's going to be part of the selection process, because it's basically, you know, I'm sure that he needs to somewhat endorse it because he's going to be the one executing the plays. But I think, you know, Pete gets along with players. And, you know, certainly I think people can say that, oh, yeah, Russell this and Russell that. He's against Russell on this one and all that stuff. And clearly we all know that Russell was promoting the idea of let Russ cook. But Russ is smart enough because he doesn't care about the passes. He cares about winning. And if the let Russ cook scenario going too far doesn't win, then Russell has to win. He will. I mean, he's got, you know, one of the best wide receiver duos in football. I mean, they got to make sure that they get the running game going. And also, it's like, hey, even from the pain standpoint, it's like it's nice to be able to run the ball a little bit more, mainly because you don't get hit as much if you're a quarterback.
So, John, ultimately, do you feel like, and again, this is all speculation, we don't know, but just in terms of the offense, that room, whether we're talking about DK, whether we're talking about Dwayne Brown, whether we're talking about anybody on that side of the ball, how do you feel like this move plays with them?
I think it'll be fine because, again, they all want to win. I mean, you know how agreeable Tyler Lockett is to any kind of thing that helps them win. DK Metcalf is such a fierce competitor. He wants to try to win. And, you know, they're both going to get there. It's not like they're going to be short passes. I mean, both of them had 1,000-yard seasons. You know, Metcalf was among the leading players for yards, and he had 100 catches for Tyler Lockett. And honestly, I don't see that changing too much. Now, maybe there might be a few less catches, but also, you know, part of the reasons that the numbers came down is they didn't get enough plays because they weren't converting the third downs. And if they can, you know, get back to like 68 to 70 plays a game, then all the numbers come and jive and do good. And again, I think this team is smart enough and the offensive guys are smart enough to know it's like, hey, the numbers are one thing. Winning's another. This team won 12 games, and they laid an egg in the playoffs that now they have to kind of wash off their face.
Hey, John, do you think somebody asked from, I think, the 206, is Schottenheimer head coach material, do you think? Or is he a few years away from that?
No, I think he is. And really, if this season finished strong, I think he would be in the mix to get some interviews. Now, he wasn't going to get any pretty much last week because the Seahawks had a game and they had to play on Saturday, so that was going to take him out of the mix. But no, his name was being mentioned. In fact, I know there was definite interest down in Houston because he used to coach down in Houston. There was interest there, but I don't think they're going to pull him in with all the interviews that they had. And of course, Houston's such a mess right now with the way that they run things that if you're Brian Schottenheimer, that's not the place you want to go. So, no, I think that he'll get a coordinator job, and the better he does, the better chance he has getting a head coaching job.
Hey, John, I thought it was interesting, the whole thing about him going up into the booth. And, you know, I thought it was because I know Bob and I have talked about it. It's really hard to see down on the sidelines. You know that. I mean, there's lots of action, everything. And I thought it was just a better vantage point for him. But do you think, I think it was brought up somewhere that
with Brock.
Was it Brock that brought it up that somewhere along the line that he moved up there, he went up there just to get away from what was possibly Pete meddling too much and, you know, kind of slowing him down. Do you buy that?
No, I don't. I think that, he has a full view of what he said. It's like, and again, it's like, look at the success that they had early. And it's like, you know, it's not when you go and you win your first games, right? And you're off to a good 5-0 start. You do great. The offense is scoring 34 points a game. Remember, it's not like he did this, made the move at week 6 to week 7. I mean, he did this at the beginning of the year, and it was working. And so the fact that it was working, I don't think getting away from Pete was something he wanted to do. He wanted to get a vantage point, and he was able to see better, and his vision was 100% just with the way that the success that they had, you know, throwing the football and getting the points.
John, we were debating this in the last segment, and the question was, you know, now looking at the season, you win 12 games, that's great, but you lose in the first round. And that's what they've been doing since 2014. They either lose the wild card or they lose the divisional round. That's been the case. So you didn't really do any better than you did previously, but you gave up 2 first-round picks and a 3rd for Jamal Adams. In your mind, based on what they achieved, was that worth it? Do you like the addition, or do you feel like they overpaid based on what they didn't achieve, or how do you feel about the trade now that the season's done?
I like the addition because I like the player. I mean, I know he got banged up a whole bunch this year, but look what he was able to do. There's been no safety in the history of this league that got 9.5 sacks. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can see he's a ferocious player. And when you look at his career from the beginning, he has the beginnings of what can be a Hall of Fame career. And so if you can pick up a Hall of Fame player, because again, you know, where do you get most of the Hall of Fame players? You get them somewhere in the top 5 or top 6 of the draft. I mean, again, there's obviously others that are going to come down lower and be able to do it. But again, you know, if you're drafting like the Seahawks do in the mid-20s every year because you're in the playoffs, you're not going to get a player as good as this. And that's why you love the NFC West, because look at what they've been able to do in getting such top players at expensive trades. I mean, you know, Trent Williams going to the San Francisco 49ers, you know, Jalen Ramsey going to the Los Angeles Rams. You know, the fact that you can see that Arizona picked up DeAndre Hopkins and stole him from Bill O'Brien. It's like, you know, this division is willing to gamble on top players and players who are the best in the game. And say what you want about Jamal Adams, he's, if not the best safety, one of the best safeties in the game.
Hey, John, we talked about K.J. Wright, and in my opinion, he was the best linebacker this year. 10-plus tackles for loss, 10-plus passes defensed. He's gotten better and better. 4 interceptions the last 2 years. You know, if he wants to go out in the market, he's going to be 32, John. And, you know, I just don't know what the market for a linebacker like that. How do you see that one going?
Well, I mean, if he's true to the words that he said to Josina Anderson, that he wants to be paid like he was played, then he's going to have a problem in Seattle. Because, again, it's like you can only do so much. And, again, he was even surprised 2 years ago when he got the $6.5 million contract because he didn't know if he was going to get an offer or not. And he played at a high level, and you like to be rewarded at a high level. But when you're 32 and, you know, you've had a history of some knee issues and all that different stuff, you have to be reasonable. And this is a year where you don't want to be unreasonable because the cap is going to go down, we presume. And if it does, it's going to affect everybody. And so, you know, they say what you want. He's not as good, obviously, and he wasn't going to play anywhere close to K.J. Wright, but they have the replacement in Cody Barton. And so if he asks for too much, then he'll go to a different team. That's why you do have to wonder if a team like Dallas and Dan Quinn will try to get him on the roster. But, of course, the other problem with that, they got to pay Dak Prescott. And they already got the, you know, 8 players with over $100 million of cap room that total up. And so it doesn't jive that he's going to get, you know, $14 to $15 million a year to go to Dallas. And so I think that, you know, he can maybe expect a slight raise, maybe to $7 million, but we'll have to see where the cap is and whether Seattle can afford that and whether other teams are going to be able to afford that.
Well, I guess what I'm seeing, the way I would see it, John, is that, like, you know, the Seahawks can't maybe, you know, afford to pay him a whole bunch of money, but I don't think the market will either. Like, do you think it'll be close enough so that, you know, if it's like, okay, I can't get seven, I can get 7 one place and I can get 6 here. Do you think they'll be competitive enough, even if it's a little bit less, to keep him here in Seattle just because of the bonus of, look, I want to retire a Seahawk. I know the history here and all that.
Yeah, I kind of get the feeling that, you know, the numbers still are going to stay pretty close, even with offers from the outside, because, you know, you look at it and you say, okay, I mean, half the league is 4-3. and half the league is 3-4. So he eliminated about 15 or 16 teams right there because he's not going to go to a 3-4 defense. He's a 4-3 now strong side, or obviously he's still going to play the weak side. And you saw Thomas Davis, who I compare him to so much, Thomas had to, pretty much go in that $5, $6 million range once he got to 33, 34 years old. And so the big contract, I just don't think might be there. And if that's the case, he'd be wise to be able to stay here. Because, again, why move for an extra $1 million?
John, we haven't jumped into the whole free agency pool with this team, and they got a lot of guys that are free agents. Can they do what they need to do with the guys they want to retain without restructuring perhaps a Russell contract or a Bobby contract with the amount of money they're paying those two guys? Is that going to be necessary with one or both of them in order to bring back everybody they need to?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they might not want to do it with Russ because you know how his agent can be very difficult to deal with, Mark Rogers. And so that I think they might want to stay away from that one. I think maybe they can do something with Bobby because, Bobby, he's going to be a career Seahawk and certainly one of the best and could be going to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And so I think they can do that. Certainly they have to do something trying to get Carlos Dunlap down from $14.1 million. And I'd have to think in the same vein as KJ Wright, he's got to accept the fact that he's older. He's not going to get $14.1 million from another team. And so adjusting his number down, maybe it's going to be half, maybe it's going to be a little less than half. But I think, if he's willing to do that, because you see what he's added to the team. Once he came on this team, Dunlap in a position that, he opened the things up for the defensive tackles, much like you saw with Frank Clark. And, he's got the right attitude for this team, and he was a great acquisition by John Snyder.
John, how in the world did the Cleveland Browns beat Pittsburgh? And I know we talked a little bit about that, but, and again, I feel sorry for the defensive coordinator there, but all the stuff that they had going on, I mean, that was – is maybe Stefanski, is he maybe coach of the year?
Yeah, I voted for him for coach of the year because I think
right.
he was the coach of the year. Because I think in the end, because with Tomlin, Mike Tomlin, losing the three games after winning 11, having the bad first half against the Colts, that kind of gave the opening for somebody like a Stefanski or a Brian Flores. And so where Flores might have been the better choice, he didn't make the playoffs because he got blown away in the last game of the season. And so now Stefanski was able to make it in. He was able to get two wins over Pittsburgh, which never happens. And so I think that he gets the advantage. Now, of course, it's interesting that here's the first playoff win, and he was sitting at home at a 65-inch screen in his basement watching the game because of COVID-19. But he deserves a lot of credit for doing a great job, and I vote for him as the coach of the year.
John, I was looking at some of the stories out there, and one of them that is that the Chargers have supposedly spoken to Urban Meyer. I mean, we hear his name a lot right now. Where does he end up, if anywhere, in your mind?
Jacksonville or a network, one of the two. I mean, because, Dean Spanos is, not cheap with his money, but he's not going to spend the money it's going to take for Urban Meyer. I mean, you want to talk to him, they'll might do it because, they're more of a college type of a town than Los Angeles. And so it's like, okay, you go through your due diligence. You maybe wanted to talk to Urban Meyer, but I can guarantee Dean Spanos is not going to pay, 10, 9, 11, $12 million for Urban Meyer. That just won't happen.
Hey, John, we don't get news. Is everything reported in the offseason as far as like surgeries and things like that? What is the NFL's obligation in the offseason to talk about players and the surgeries and mm-hmm. stuff they had?
None. Absolutely none.
That's what I thought.
They have nothing to say about it. So, like, for example, I mean, you go to Bill Belichick and ask him, hey, so did this player, did Julian Edelman have to get an additional surgery for that knee problem? I'll give the on to Cincinnati, and I'll give the injury report the Thursday, the Wednesday before the first game of the regular season. No, he was like, there's no obligation because, again, first off, once the players get done, with their interviews and the exit interviews, they're gone to the minicamp. And so it's like the minicamp and the OTAs. So you're not going to be able to be around them. And so they may not know completely what's going on with some of the players. I mean, they should because, if you're going to be a good coach and a good organization, you want to track, okay, what's everybody doing and who's getting the surgeries and who's not. But they don't have to reveal a single thing about it.
Hey, what are the Bears going to do with that quarterback spot? I mean, Trubisky is a guy they didn't commit to, obviously, as far as picking up an option. So they've got Foles there, and I saw a quote from, I think, their GM basically just saying, you know, everything's on the table, which is a very general statement. So what do you think ultimately happens with Trubisky and Foles there?
I think they're going to part ways with Trubisky. I mean, his contract's up. He's got no leverage right now to get a decent deal. And so, I mean, if he comes back and he wants to sign for $3, $4 million, they can put him in the competition. But, you know, they still have Foles, and I have to think that they can go for another guy. One guy I think they might be looking at would be if Jimmy Garoppolo, who, you know, is from the Chicago area, if something happens to him in San Francisco, that could be an option. And, of course, they can look to the draft, but then the problem with that is that they just watched, you know, the 4-year cycle for Mitch Trubisky, and, you know, he didn't get any better during the 4 years. Sure, they made the playoffs twice with Trubisky at quarterback, but so much of that was because of the easy schedule that they had and Trubisky winning the easy games.
John, you mentioned it real quick because I know we've got to go to break, but do you think the Niners proceed with Jimmy Garoppolo going forward?
Debatable. I think they've got to see where the market is. Like, for example, I can guarantee if Matthew Stafford is let go or in a trade from Detroit, I guarantee they may jump on him because, you know, that's the type of quarterback that Kyle Shanahan likes. And obviously they like Jimmy Garoppolo, but I think that you can see it's like, okay, you know, here's Stafford. I mean, he'll get this injury, he'll get that injury, but he's always out there on the field. Garoppolo's missed 23 of 48 games. And so it's like, you know, it's not his fault. It's not like, you know, he shies away because he's hurt. I mean, again, he's been hurt and he's got serious injuries. I mean, he got a high ankle sprain in the Seattle game and never bounced back. And so, you know, I think that they have to think about, are we good enough at the quarterback position with Jimmy if he's there? And then also they need cap room because one thing is, even though he makes $27.5 million, I think his dead money is only two if they let him go.
John, we appreciate it. Stay warm. We'll talk tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
There you go. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. All right, should Russell Wilson have a say in the next offensive coordinator? And if so, how much? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.